Hi, I'm David Smook, and we are actually in my home. I would say we're in my living room, but it's one of these Baltimore row houses, so it's kind of one space. It's all everything all at once. And yes, we'll walk over. I've got my toy piano right over in the corner here.
This is something you actually have. You sit down on the toy piano bench for this, and you sort of look like a Gulliver character.
Yeah, or a little bit like Schroeder, I think people say. When I was a kid, I always, reading the Peanuts comments, Schroeder was the one. I liked that he played catcher on the team, and I was always getting run over. And I didn't quite realize what he was doing with the toy piano, but yes, it was my destiny, I guess.
It's a nice sort of wood finish color in baby grand style. I don't know. What can you tell us about
Well,
this
they
thing?
call the color mahogany, but it's more like a cherry red mahogany. So, I think of it as a racing car mahogany. And it's made actually by a company called Schoenhut, which is based in Florida, and this one was designed specifically for me. And the basic mechanism of it is that there are little plastic hammers inside that hit the rods. So there are keys, and the key plays the plastic hammer. The hammer hits the rod, and the sound of it's very similar to that of a music box because it's a very similar mechanism. The way the music box, if you ever open up a music box, there are little pieces of metal and a spindle, and the spindle has pieces of plastic which go around and hit the pieces of metal.
Well, let me just ask you, David, what you're in the mood to play on an afternoon like this.
Well, actually, I was thinking a little bit about this, and to me, the toy piano sounds a lot like kind of an idealized childhood that none of us ever actually had. And so, kind of this, whenever I hear the sound, I think, oh, yeah, that's what childhood should sound like. And so, I thought, maybe a song that's a song from the childhood and none of us ever had. So, the Brahms Cradle Song seems like a perfect place to start us off.
There is something sweet and nostalgic, but also sort of horrifying and subversive about this particular tone and timbre, don't you think?
And I think a large part of that is that you hear the mechanism. So when you play a note, if I play it very, very, very lightly, you don't hear it at all. But if I play it and hold it, you hear all that mechanism sound. There's the click of the key releasing. There's the way the hammer might strike or might not strike. It kind of creates this sense of, yes, like a little bit off, like everything's just kind of a little, but like I say, off, but in a really sweet way. So let's turn on this amplifier that you're sitting on. So now you can hear the sound is a little bit different. It's got a fullness to it. With the amplifier, I've basically entirely turned off the low end, and yet still it adds a little bit of lowness to it. But with that, I can do things like take fishing line. Actually bow the tines. And then, say if you take the normal sound, you can dampen it by putting your finger on it. And then you might even strum a little bit.
You must acknowledge and appreciate to some degree the comic effect of this instrument, right? As when you sit down for a performance, there's an element of the absurd, right? Talk about that.
Well, yes, it's funny. I'm an old bald dude, right? It's funny when I sit down on a little bench. It's comfortable. It's the best way to play the instrument. There's a reason it all works. But it's I yes. So I understand it's funny. I like twisting that comedic expectation. So like taking the idea of, yes, there is humor here. Yes, it is childlike. It is humorous. And now we're going to take that, we build a little bit of trust, and maybe from that level of trust, ask you to then go to a place that might be a little bit uncomfortable.
I wonder how you're perceived by more traditional composers, whether or not there's an issue of maybe feeling like you're not taken seriously by some, or how does that pan out?
Well, chairing the music theory department at a place like Peabody Conservatory kind of, I don't have to worry about that. I have a doctorate in this stuff from University of Chicago, and so I kind of go, that's the liberating aspect is, before I had some of these academic credentials, I would have maybe been frightened. But now that I do, I don't have to be afraid anymore.
I think what you're doing and the instrument that you're doing it on is a nice reminder about what making music is supposed to be. You know, some people probably get so anxious about the barriers to entry with music and just taking music so seriously, this is a kind of a nice antidote to that.
I think that's a really nice way of looking at it. And for me, I got my start really as a punk and a goth in kind of the LA punk scene in the 80s. And what drew me to experimental music was that same idea, that same just joy of exploring sound.
Let's talk specifically about this piece that you have coming up. Talk about the title of this composition and the story behind it.
Well, it's called Nutshell Studies of Unexplained Death, which is an actual exhibition that's at the Maryland Coroner's Office in downtown Baltimore, west of Martin Luther King Boulevard. And if you send a letter to the Maryland Coroner, you can go visit these. They're little dollhouses that were created by Frances Glessner Lee in the 1940s and 1950s. And she was very interested in the forensic science. And so each of these dollhouses, you look at them and they look like pretty little domestic scenes. And oh, everything's nice. Oh, there's the mother. Oh, but she's asleep. No, she's not asleep. That's blood coming out of her head. And so this kind of way of, you know, bringing it, starting with the dollhouse and then twisting it, but it has actual real world value, where these were part of the original training for forensic science, and they were housed in the Harvard Forensic Science Department until that folded, and then they came to the Maryland Coroner's Office, and they're still to this day utilized in the training of detectives, because all the clues for solving what happened to these people are in these little dollhouses.
Hyper-realistic dollhouse murder scenes.
Pretty much, yes.
So it's going to be you on your toy piano, and how many other people? This is going to be a big performance.
Yeah, it's about 35, 36 people. Harlan Parker conducting, and an ensemble of Peabody students. Five percussionists, a banjo player, because I needed something to kind of go between the classical instruments and the toy piano, so banjo. Four saxophones, two horns, three trumpets, two flutes, two piccolos, one who stays off stage, all sorts of, a huge ensemble.
Suffice it to say, the rest of these musicians are playing grown-up sized instruments.
Yeah, and they're sitting in regular chairs and they've got regular music stands. They'll probably be wearing tuxedos too.
I think one of the things that really comes through when you hear someone, a grown-up or child, playing on a toy piano, or any kind of a toy, when you witness a child playing with a toy, it can obviously be a very sweet and heartwarming thing, but it can also be, disturbing. Toys are are sort of psychological tools. They're tools for emotional expression in all of its emotional range. And I suspect that, you know, you can really, you know, surprise people with, you know, the way that you quote unquote play with an instrument like this.
Yeah, and I think that that's I think part of the whole thing is that play is really what artists are doing for our whole lives.
Toy piano composer and chair of the music theory department at Peabody Conservatory, David Smook, visiting with us at his home in Locust Point. For The Signal, I'm Aaron Hinken.